is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Mijai Raducanu from Gannon Baker Basketball, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are coming on to talk 71.
1971 was the year that Disney World came into existence. Is that what we're talking about, Mike?
That was the year after I was born. But no, that's not what we're talking about. I think we're going to talk some Donovan Mitchell 71 tonight.
Oh, Donovan Mitchell. Oh, yeah, that guy.
71, dude. That was crazy.
Do you see? Yeah, and we'll get into it. Do you see the NBA came out and said that it shouldn't have happened?
Yeah. Well, yeah, clearly it shouldn't have. That's the first thing. When they showed the replay, that was the first thing I was watching. I'm like, how did he get down there so fast? And clearly, he was across the line. I wonder, because now thinking about it in retrospect, I wonder if his – when he took the step, like did his foot hit the ground before the ball hit the rim? Because clearly he was across the line, at least in the air across the line without question. And I'm sure his foot was probably across the line too. But I'm just curious if the foot was in the air before the ball hit the ground, if he took a big, giant running step or whatever. But that play was crazy. And to have two of those, because Luka had one against the Knicks in his 60-point game.
Yeah.
To have two of those plays.
60, ha.
Yeah, exactly. That looked really good a week ago. It doesn't look quite as impressive as it did a week ago. Although what was interesting too, well, we can get into the whole – are we just going right into it, or are we going wind shears?
Well, I got wind shears. Let's finish
the Donovan Mitchell talk. Let's just roll with the Donovan Mitchell, and then okay. We'll go to wind shears.
Okay.
So you know that Mitchell had, 11 assists, right? So the second most assists was actually Booker, who had, I believe, 6 assists. So Mitchell had the second most – he accounted for the second most points –
99 points, I believe.
99 compared to
Will Chamberlain's 104 in his 100-point game. Is that accurate?
Yes, 104 in his 100-point game. So Wilt dished out 2 big assists in that game. Although Wilt, I believe, had another game where one of his multi-70-point games, I think it was 78 points and, if I'm not mistaken, 36 rebounds, if I'm not mistaken, in one of his 70-point games. So do you know who had all the 70-point games?
Well, that was going to be my question to you. I have the list pulled up.
Cheated. We looked it up last night when it came up. Me and Cal looked it up last night when he got to 70.
So for the listeners out there, Kobe had 81. Chamberlain had 78, 73, 73. David Thompson had 73. Will Chamberlain had 72. Elgin Baylor had 71. David Robinson, I can't believe David Robinson had 71. That one blows my mind, Mike.
Last day of the season.
Oh, no way.
That was when he was locked in a duel for the scoring title with
Yeah, Shaquille O'Neal, second year in the end for the Illinois. Robinson edged out Shaq narrowly with 29.8, while O'Neal averaged 29.3. And then Wilt had 70 as well, you know, because he didn't have enough games where he was. And Devin Booker has a 70-point game. There you go.
Yes, yes.
So now Donovan Mitchell is tied for eighth all-time in most points in a game. And he missed, and he only had 5 points in the first quarter, too. Mike.
Well, when he had 55 with, I don't know, 3 minutes to go, we at my house, we said, well, if he gets to 60, they probably got a good chance to win. And I guess that worked out. I did not see 70 on the horizon, although at that point, I'm not sure I saw overtime on the horizon because it looked like the Bulls were going to be able to pull that thing out after leading the whole game. Devastating yeah. loss for the Bulls.
Yeah, bad loss for the Bulls, Mike. Which brings me to the opposite of that. The Chicago Bulls win shares. I thought this would be perfect, Mike.
All right, so let's go to it. I got more Donovan Mitchell talk, but go ahead. Okay, I know you're dying to give me this.
Listen, if you don't get the first one, Mike, I'm going
to... Okay, there's a lot of pressure.
All right.
I'm going to go with Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
He's number one. Okay.
So two has to be Scotty.
There you go. Two is Scotty.
Three starts to get interesting.
I agree.
So
let me just say in the top five, there's only one more player that played in their era.
Really?
Really?
Okay.
And number six, I'm gonna just tell you this one. Number six is Luol Deng. So go for it, buddy.
Okay. So I'm gonna go with it has to be Rodman.
No, it is not Rodman.
Horace Grant.
Horace Grant is number five.
What's Rodman?
Rodman is not in the top 12.
Really? As part of that, well, I guess he didn't play there long
enough.
There's
only one other player that is in from their era, and he's number 12.
So, Will Perdue?
No.
Bill Wennington?
No.
Steve Kerr?
Nope, same complexion. You're on the right track.
Tony Kukoc.
There you go. Okay. All right. So there's two guys. Now, one guy is really old school, and the other guy is somewhat old school. Yeah, I'll be
so
old.
He's pre-Jordan.
So both
these guys are pre-Jordan.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, to be fair, this one guy played with Jordan for a year.
Norm Van Leer.
No. And didn't even make it for the season because I think got traded or something.
Orlando Woolridge?
No. Hold on, I'm going back.
Traded.
Oakley? No, he was started in Chicago and then ended in Boston, 87-88.
Started in Chicago, ended in Boston.
He had a big fro.
Artis Gilmore.
There you go. He's number four.
All right.
And then number three is throwing it back old school, like big time. He played for Chicago from 69 to 75. His nickname was the Jet, and it's not Kenny.
The Jet. That doesn't help me. It's not good.
He started his career in
Chet Walker.
There you go. There you go. Got it. Good job, buddy.
All right.
He's number three. Does that surprise you a little bit?
It's a little surprising. Like I said, I'm surprised when you think about all the winning that the Jordan Bulls did.
It's really crazy, especially when I say the rest of the top 12. So Luol Deng was six.
Yep.
Mr. Who Wants to Go to Cleveland is number seven, Joakim Noah.
Okay.
Number eight is Jimmy Butler. Number nine is Bob Love.
Okay.
Number 10, the former coach of the Utah Jazz.
Jerry Sloan, yeah.
And number 11, the guy that was the Cavs' kryptonite in the era of LeBron, the first era. Short white point guard.
Kirk Heinrich.
There you go, number 11.
All right.
Yeah, I swear, Kirk Heinrich always had great games against the Cavs and LeBron. I'd always remember.
Meredith despised Kirk Heinrich.
Why is that?
I don't know. And Joakim Noah, she hated both of them. I don't know why.
Well, Joakim Noah just looks
wasn't a fan of the Bulls of that era. Let's put it that way. She was not a fan. She was not a fan of the Bulls.
Okay, so going back to Mitchell, like, I think it's time for me to bring this up again, Mike. And I know I brought it up in Texas today. I seem to recall a time that you said you weren't a fan of the Donovan Mitchell trade, Mike.
My initial reaction, as I stated back then, was ugh. That was my initial reaction to the trade. I think my initial reaction was based upon two things. One, feeling like we gave up an awful lot, which still I think is probably accurate. I'm not saying that we're at a point where we can say we gave up too much, but we certainly did not give up nothing in order to acquire Donovan Mitchell. So that's part of the equation.
You mean we've given up too much in Ochai Agbaji, who's hardly played in the NBA?
You've given up Markkanen, who may very well be a Western Conference All-Star.
Okay.
Sexton, who is a good player, not a great player, a good player. And who knows what the draft equity is going to look like. Clearly, if the Cavs stay on the trajectory where they are now, the draft equity is not going to look too horrible. However, you still just don't have those picks to be able to replenish and maybe get lucky and get a guy. So, look, I get it. I think at this point, there's no one in their right mind that would say this was a bad trade, myself included. And I think we also underrated Donovan Mitchell in terms of what he's brought to the table. I also think, I don't know if you read the article by Wendy today on ESPN.com. Did you see that article?
I did not read it, Mike. I did not.
So it just said something to the effect of...
I had to teach today.
Okay, that's unfortunate for you. So our pipes burst. So I wouldn't have had to teach today anyway. It was supposed to be a professional day, but I won't have any students the rest of the week.
The pipes burst and it's like 60 degrees outside.
Well, not today. They didn't burst, but they burst over the time when it was freezing. So,
oh, so wait, you got the whole week off?
Well, yeah, our students are asynchronous for the rest of the week. So they're supposed to come back Monday, but we have no cafeteria and like 7 classrooms were wiped out. So,
well, look at you.
Yeah. So anyway, so it's back to school.
Sorry for our talking shop during the podcast.
Nonetheless, I think that you look at what – anyway, this article by Brian Windhorst talked about how basically Mitchell didn't want to go out the way that he went out with Utah and just felt like he wanted to rededicate himself regardless of whether he was going to come back to Utah or whether he's going to be traded somewhere. He just basically rededicated himself, went down to Miami and ran and worked with his trainer and did all kinds of work on the track and really got himself in the best condition that he's ever been in. And so I think, at least on my part, there was an underestimation of what Donovan Mitchell was. And then I think, again, he's come back probably the best he's ever been, rededicated himself on the defensive end of the floor. And look, he could not have fit in any better. I think that 71-point game, when you look at this Cavs team and you just look how genuinely excited every guy on that team was to see Mitchell do that, to have him be and to be able to be a part of his night, it was just fun to watch the bench and how excited those guys were. And then what was cracking me up is once that game was over, so with like a minute and a half to go in overtime when it was clear the Cavs were going to win, they had an 8-point lead. The smile on Mitchell's face as he was trying to get to 70 was just like, he's coming down. He just couldn't contain himself. He was at the free throw line that one time. He had a big smile on his face. When the game ended and everybody's jumping on him and pouring water on him, none of those guys, and Mitchell more than anybody else, obviously, just couldn't stop smiling. And it was so much fun just to watch. I mean, you can't imagine obviously scoring 71 points in an NBA game, but if you've ever played and just got on a hot streak where you feel like anything you throw up there is going to go in, I mean, that's what it looked like with Mitchell. And yet at the same time, I thought what was interesting is there really wasn't any point in that game where it felt like he was just gunning for, I'm going to try to get 60 or I'm going to try to get 70 or I'm going to try to get 50. It was just, he was doing what was necessary for the team to win that game. He had a couple of passes to Jared Allen in overtime that Allen dunked on where he probably could have forced a shot, but he made the right play, made the pass, And it sounds crazy to say for a guy who scored 71 points, but it felt like it was really kind of in the flow and in the flow of what was necessary for the Cavs to win that game. Now, we can argue whether or not the Cavs at home should be, and again, granted, Garland was out, Mobley was out, but you could argue whether or not the Cavs should be battling in overtime with the Bulls, regardless of who's playing or who's not. But nonetheless, those guys were so happy, and Mitchell, the smile was just cracking me up the whole time because he just, the team, they're together, and that's what's fun about this team. And it was fun to see Mitchell get 71. It had to be for anybody who was in the building. That was great. I was actually in the building. I was in the building when Kyrie had 55 against the Trailblazers. That was 2015. That was fun.
I had multiple people at work today that had were at the game last night, or I had students that and that were at the game, and they were making sure they let me know about it. So I really appreciated that. So
nice.
All right. So I'm overall, I know we wanted them to go 3-0. I'm not too disappointed. That first game was not good, but at the same time, like, listen, the whole Garland once again getting injured, like. And I don't know how you feel about the whole, like, he's not getting reffed the right way, but are these all just fluke injuries, Mike? Or are you starting to be concerned slightly that Garland seems to constantly getting injured? Or is it just the nature of the beast and we're okay with it? I don't know how I feel even at this point. I just know that he seems to be getting injured a lot.
You're taking a beating on your hands, I guess, so... It's just the way it is. I don't know that he's injury prone. I mean, obviously you don't like to see him sitting out, and it's concerning that it's happened multiple times, and he seems to be a magnet for guys' hands in the face and chopping down on his hands, whatever it might be. But I don't think at this point it's something that I'm overly concerned about other than just him missing games that you'd like to see him playing in. So I don't think it's a long-term or chronic problem, but certainly you want to see him out on the floor. And without him, it goes back to where they were last year, where you basically have Mitchell kind of as your creator. And then when he's not out there creating, things kind of get stagnant, or you're really over-dependent upon what Mitchell can do. When it takes 71 to beat a mediocre Bulls team, that's really not the position you want to be in. Obviously, it's a good win, but it's not the position that you want to be in if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's put it that way.
Yep. All right. So let's predict the week, Mike.
All right.
And this is when the schedule starts to get a little more difficult for a little bit here.
It definitely does. We got a stretch.
All right. So tomorrow we're home against the Suns. I'm going to go ahead and assume that Mobley's playing at least tomorrow.
No Booker. That's a win.
That's a win, right? Okay. Yes. Friday at the Nugs. That's a loss, right? That's a loss.
I got to think that's a loss.
Okay. Then Sunday, back at it again, we're at Phoenix. Is that another dub again? Is that a dub? Can they go 2-0 against the Suns, or is it going to be a loss?
I think you're going to win that one.
Okay. And then next Tuesday, we'll probably be recording it. We might have to hold off next Tuesday's recording until the completion of the Cavs game, Mike.
Yep. Starts at 9.
They start at 9.
Yeah. Won't be too far off our normal start.
No. So they play at Utah. I think that's a win.
I'll take a win there.
So you're saying 3-1?
I'd be very happy with that.
If they go 2-2, are you happy with that?
Nah, probably not.
I think I'm okay with 2-2. I'm not over the moon about it, but I think I'm okay with it, considering the opponents.
Yeah, you're probably okay.
Yeah. All right, so... That takes care of the Cavs talk. I guess let's transition to the rest of the ridiculous performances in the NBA. We'll start with Luka, since that chronologically happened first. Luka has a 60-point triple-double, which, by the way, Donovan was very close to a triple-double. Okay, Luka is the first player ever to have a 60-point triple-double. That ridiculous free throw put back. And then his little happy dance afterwards was pretty awesome.
And then they end up winning. They said he thought they won the game. No, but they said he thought he won the game. He thought they had won, that they were winning after he made that shot.
Oh, I didn't know that. I just thought you were going to talk about recovery beers.
That was what he apparently said in the interview, that he thought they had he thought they had won the game, but anyway, so then he had to go back.
If that was the case, why would he miss the free throw then?
Right, but in his in the moment as he made the shot, he just felt like he was he felt like they had won. So
I got
for whatever it's worth.
But pretty crazy game. That was a pretty good one. I had already gone to bed. I had a super bad migraine after we recorded last night, or last week, and I went to bed, and then I woke up to your text message, and I was like, oh my God, of course I missed it. I saw your text. You told me he had, I don't remember what he had at halftime or whatever, or third quarter, and I was like, I missed it. Oh well. But yeah, I mean, awesome. I saw highlights. He looked really good in that game. Obviously, once again, his usage rate is at a ridiculous level right now, and they need to figure something out. They need to make a trade if they can even pull that off. Or,
however, they have won 7 in a row, and they are currently in 4th place in the Western Conference, which shows you how bunched up everything is. Because a week ago, I think they were 9th or 10th, and now they've run off 7 in a row, and they are up to 4th, and they are only 2.5 games out of 1st. However, they are only 5 games out of 11. So you're basically a 5-game winning streak either way of moving up into the top 4 or moving down out of the play-in. So Dallas has been playing better. I think we're going to probably do this for every one of these guys and every one of these performances that we're talking about. Luka, last 10 games. Ready?
Yep.
37 minutes a game. 53% from the field, 42% from three, 77% from the line, 9.9 rebounds, 9.4 assists, 38.2 points per game in the last 10. Not bad.
Not bad at all.
He's just so difficult to guard. I mean, he gets wherever he wants to go, and he's got tremendous footwork, and he's so strong. He just bumps guys out of the way, and the combination of that footwork and that strength just combined to allow him to get just about any shot that he wants. It's one of those things where you watch him and part of you is like, well, what's he really doing that's that special? He's not that fast, doesn't jump that high. It's not like he's got the ball on a string the way you think of like a Kyrie handling the ball, but yet he just has such good body control. He's so strong and he just gets wherever he wants to go. And then if you guard him with two guys or you double them or whatever, he's such a good passer, he just finds the open man. And if Dallas, look, it's been the same way all of last season and pretty much since Luka's been there. If they shoot threes well, you're going to have a heck of a time beating them. So it's just a matter of, and I know you were talking about what's out there for them in terms of a trade or what do they need to do. I mean, clearly this team, they've won 7 in a row, but you and I have talked about it before. I don't think this is a championship level roster. Now, that doesn't mean anybody wants to see Luka in the playoffs, but can this team win 4
no
playoff rounds? No. I mean, either Luka's going to get completely worn down because he just can't do it all, or you're going to just be relying on guys who maybe they have a good series, maybe they have a good game, maybe they have a good series of games, but I don't think the rest of this roster is equipped to play at a championship level for 4 rounds. I just don't see it. And yet at the same time, if I was any team, I'd be scared to death to have to deal with Luka in a 7-game playoff series. I would not want to be the team that has to take him out. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Speaking of teams that are not equipped for a championship.
Okay.
We're going to transition to LeBron now, Mike.
All right.
On his 38th birthday, LeBron casually just drops 47-10-9. I know you had some stats over the last three or four games. He's, since Anthony Davis has been out with his stress reaction in his foot, I'm rolling my eyes over here right now. I'm twitching a little bit. Stress reaction in his foot.
Okay, so LeBron, well, let's just go with we just went with Luka's last 10. So here's LeBron's last 10.
Okay.
58% field goals. Unfortunately, he's still only banging home 25% of his threes. Good. 81% from the line, which for LeBron is tremendous for LeBron.
Astounding.
7.4 rebounds, 7 assists, 34.6 points a game at age 38. And I forget his on-off numbers. I think they read him off on the low post today, but it was something to the effect of 27. They were plus 27 with LeBron on the floor and minus 58 with LeBron off the floor. So clearly, look, the roster around him is not nearly what it needs to be. And I still continue to have reservations about where LeBron is in terms of his capacity to play. And I don't even want to say second fiddle, but what do you need to, I mean, here, okay. Would he even need to play second fiddle? Am I kidding myself? How many teams would he play second fiddle on? Not many.
Hey, Mike, I want to bring this up to you really quickly.
Second fiddle on the Cavs? Could he play in a quartet with the Cavs?
For sure.
Could
Sign
he be
me
equal,
up.
Equal billing for LeBron and Darius.
Sign me up.
Donovan
Sign me
Mitchell.
Up.
Equal,
Sign me
equal
up.
Equal billing? All right.
Sign me up. Mike.
No chemistry worries? Nothing?
No, not at all.
Nothing?
I'm not worried. Nah.
No?
No. Nope.
Nothing.
I'm not worried.
All right. We can't trade for him, though, so it doesn't matter. If he's coming here, he's still not coming here for another season and a half. Which is another season and a half of Father Time trying to make inroads. Father Time is still trying to pick the lock on LeBron's log cabin. He can't quite get in there. Seems like he's got it, and then he gets to the last number, he just can't unlock it.
Or it's like when they're playing a immunity challenge on Survivor, and someone's really, really, really close to finishing the tower or whatever, and then it just falls over, and they have to start from the beginning again. Is that a good analogy?
That's a good analogy, too. That's a good analogy, too.
For our Survivor fans out there?
This roster is broken, and without Anthony Davis, we've said it a million times, as everybody else has, the Lakers are beating a dead horse. And I think what's going to be really interesting is to see whether or not they make a move. If they do make a move, what kind of move do they make? Is Russell Westbrook involved in the move? Are the 27 and 29 draft picks involved in the move? If you're the Lakers, and I was thinking about this more and more, you really don't care about those draft picks, right? I mean, when you're the Lakers, somebody's always going to want to come and play in Los Angeles, regardless of whether LeBron's there, whether AD's still there. You look at the history of the Lakers, and they've been able to always, always attract players to LA. And how much of what they've done has been building through the draft throughout their history? The answer to that is very little. I guess you get Magic in the draft, but you did that with a trade with the Cavs. And Kareem came in a trade. I just think that you're always going to be able to get free agents to come to Los Angeles. And it feels like the draft, look, giving up those picks, depending upon what you can get, why not? Why not if you're the Lakers? At least give yourself a chance where you can talk yourself into, hey, we can get into the plan. Or look, I mean, the reality is, as bad as they've played, if they were to get somebody else functional in there and they could become a functional NBA team and somehow you get Davis back, they're not that far gone where, because the West is so bundled up, that they're four games out of the sixth spot. Now, that's a long way to go, and there's a bunch of teams for them to jump over. But you're telling me if somehow the Lakers were to get All-Star X, somehow they get Bradley Beal out of Washington, and he could stay healthy, and you get Davis back. Beal, LeBron, and Davis can't make up four games in the standings?
If it's Anthony Davis that was playing before he got injured, maybe.
Yeah. I just think if you're the Lakers, why are you holding on to those picks for 4 or 6 years from now? That may come back and bite you, and it may come back and bite you if you don't get in the playoffs and somehow that pick shoots up to the top and Wembanyama is headed to New Orleans to play with the injured Zion and injured Brandon Ingram. But I just think if you're the Lakers, look, do I think they're going to win the title no matter what they do? No. But if you're a Lakers fan or you're in the Lakers organization, wouldn't you rather see a season with LeBron playing at this kind of level where at least he's got a chance to be competitive in a playoff series? And if they make a trade and get somebody else in there and Davis is relatively healthy, again, that's a case where nobody's going to want to play them.
I agree. I mean, and they haven't even really looked good. But at the same time, it's just LeBron and AD. You don't want to play them. I agree with you, Mike.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
Do we move to the last thing that happened, the most recent?
Sure.
Giannis tonight, Mike.
55. Career high.
Yeah. Career high. Psh, 55. Psh. Give me a break.
0 for 3 from 3. Old school. Did it old school style.
55, 10, 7. Well, I mean, how many free throws did he take tonight?
That's a good question. A lot, I'm guessing.
I mean, Donovan also had a lot of free throws yesterday, so it can't...
Giannis was 15 of 16 from the line.
Wow, he made 16 free throws.
I think the thing with Giannis is, it's almost to the point where I'm saying 15 out of 16. So I think the thing with Giannis is that he just, I don't know if it's taken for granted. I don't know if it's discounted because he doesn't look like everybody else because he's still, his jump shot still isn't nearly what you would hope that it could become. And I don't know if it's ever going to get there. But, all right, we've done the last 10 for these other guys. So here's LeBron's – or here's Giannis's last 10. 51% from the field. He's below LeBron, shooting 21% from three. 68% from the line. 13.5 rebounds. 4.5 assists. 34.6 points per game. So we're talking about all these guys are well up into the mid-30s when it comes to points per game over their last 10. And I think the thing, too, with Giannis is that the Bucks have been scuffling. I mean, it's sort of probably an even bigger indictment than Mitchell needing 71 to beat the Bulls. At least the Bulls were at full strength. You got the Wizards, who I know have been hot and playing relatively well comparatively to maybe what you think they've been playing.
Well, they just blew the Bucks out the other night, right?
They're 6-4 in their last 10. But when you need 55 from Giannis, if you're Milwaukee, to beat the Wizards, I'm not sure that's a great sign for the Bucks. Although it comes with the caveat of they still don't have their whole team. And I think Drew Holiday tonight only played like 15 minutes for some reason. I know he's been sick and maybe he just went out there and didn't play as much. Let me see how many minutes. I thought I looked and I saw he didn't play very many minutes. He didn't start. He played 19 minutes, had 6 points. So you still are without Middleton, who's basically played like 5 games the whole season. And it feels like this team is sort of scuffling. They haven't really figured it out. They started the season 9-0. And since then, what does that make them? 15-13. So they're barely above 500 since that 9-0 start. And Giannis has continued to be as good as advertised, but he's still, I don't want to say he's easier to stop than other guys because obviously he just gets the rim and posts up and does whatever he wants. But it feels like in crunch time, he might be a little bit easier to stop than some of these other guys we've been talking about just because his jumper isn't quite as good. And that being said,
I still wouldn't want to play him.
I guess we have to, we have this discussion. Maybe we need to have the discussion of which guy in a vacuum would you least want to play against?
The answer is Giannis. The answer is Giannis. Out of all the guys we've talked about tonight, I think Giannis is the answer.
I think you know why.
Because he can pass. Because he can. Well, that and he can pass the ball so well and get the ball to other people out of everyone else. Yeah, yeah.
And I think he's the most physically imposing at this point in his career. So I think the combination of his being just his fear, you know, his physical presence, and I think his relentlessness, and then what he brings to the table offensively, especially in the playoffs where he's guarding multiple guys and where he can wreak havoc from the weak side and do all the things that he does. I think you're probably right. The answer is still probably Giannis. But, man, all these other guys are playing really, really, really well. So, next guy. Who are we going to talk about next? Got to talk Joker, right?
Yeah. For sure. He's been playing pretty well, obviously. He's been putting up ridiculous stats. I'm sure you have the numbers ready to go. I know on Christmas Day he had a great day game, and he had 45 again the other night. Has he cracked 50? Did he crack 50 in a game?
I don't think he's had 50. I don't think, but I could be wrong. But he's half an assist away from averaging a triple double right now at this point for the totality of the season. So. His last 10. All right, here we go. 58% from the field, 47% from three, 82% from the line, 12.1 rebounds, 10.7 assists, 28.1 points per game. So he's up to, on the season, I know there was a point early in the year where he was just over 20. He was averaging like 21 a game. Well, he's up to 25.6. at this point, which I know doesn't look quite as impressive next to all these mid-30s that we've been reading off, but Jokic is just a different breed, and the way he passes the ball.
Here you go, Mike. So ESPN Stats and Info said that Jokic finished December averaging 29 points per game, 12 rebounds, and 10 assists on 60% shooting. He's the second player in NBA history to average a triple-double on 60% shooting in a calendar month. Minimum 10 games. Who's the only player that has done this? And he's actually done it twice.
Has to be Wilt, right?
Yep, in 68. February and March of 68.
Here's just what's ridiculous. Like, any stat that's insane, there's only one name that that ever comes out of anyone's mouth, right? It's just, that has to be a Wilt stat line. Which speaks to, again, I think, look, you weren't there, I wasn't there. And I know that you can say that, hey, Wilt's playing against guys that are 6 inches shorter than him and aren't nearly the level of athlete that he is. But the honest truth is that in the moment when Wilt was playing, he's playing against the best that the world has to offer. And I continue to just be amazed at what he was able to do. And I still think he's probably – look, there's some truth to the fact that maybe he wasn't always the guy to come through in the big moments and this and that, but you just, the sheer volume of the numbers are just, they're just ridiculous. And anytime you hear a crazy stat line, the only person you can ever possibly guess is Wilt. There's just no other guess. There just isn't.
I agree. And then he didn't even win Player of the Month because Doncic won Player of the Month for the Western Conference.
Which isn't surprising. I think, when you look at where Denver is right now and you sit and they're at the top of the Western Conference right now and they're, I believe, 14-3 at home, and we know they have a good home court advantage because of the Mile High City and all the elevation and all that stuff. But the fact that they're 14-3 at home, they've already played 20 road games. So they played 17 at home. They've already played 20 road games and they're sitting atop the Western Conference. You look at what's behind them, and I guess Memphis is two, starting to get healthy. Bane is back. If Jaren Jackson Jr. can stop falling and stay on the floor.
Memphis, I don't believe that's going to happen.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. But Memphis is pretty much whole at this point. New Orleans obviously is still without Ingram. And then last night, unfortunately, Zion goes down with the hamstring, which today they're saying 3 weeks that he's going to miss, which probably means he's going to miss longer than that.
When I called you, I told you a month. That was me factoring in. They said 3 weeks. That means it's going to be a month.
Yeah, I would think he's going to be out longer. But who knows? The Pelicans have proved
feeling
to be,
better about my 250 games.
No. He's gonna blow by that without any problem. But you want to have this guy on the floor. He's a force of nature, and his stat lines again are absurd because his shot attempts are like 17, and he's always 12 for 17 or 10 for 12 or 9 for 13. Or he just. Nobody can stop him, and he's so much better of a player, I think, than most people give him credit for in terms of his feel and his passing and the things that he does on the offensive end of the floor for sure. He's a one-man wrecking ball, and anytime he's hurt, the league is worse without him. There's no question about that. He's so much fun to watch. But behind the Nuggets, then you got Memphis, Pelicans, Mavericks, we've already talked about. Sacramento Kings are sitting in the 5 seed right now. And
the beam.
Light the beam, baby. The Clippers, who knows what you got with the Clippers any given day. Kawhi's been good when he's played, but how much is he going to play? And can you trust him to go through a 4-week playoff series or a four series in 2 months to win the NBA title? I don't know if I'd feel really good about that. Portland, I think they're mediocre. Phoenix, without Booker, certainly they're mediocre at best without Devin Booker. And then the Warriors, 3-16 away from home, 17-2 at home. It's insane.
Yep.
That's unbelievable. And they've actually, without Steph, they've been, I think they're 6-4 without Steph, or maybe 5-3. Well,
Clay,
I can't remember somewhere.
Didn't Clay drop 54 last night?
54 last night. So, then you get to Utah, Minnesota, and the Thunder after that. The West to me is a mess. Like, I don't know. I said Denver at the beginning of the season. And I don't see any reason to change that. I think if Denver is healthy, I think they're the best team in the West based on what we've seen to this point in the season. Maybe something will come and prove me wrong. And maybe the idealized version of the Clippers, you can maybe say, is better if you're getting those two guys at full strength. But I'm not sure. The Pelicans, we've already talked about, I think they're really good. Their offense has been phenomenal, and their defense has been way better than expected. But zero to no playoff experience for that team together. Zion's never played in a playoff game. Hard to believe they're going to go from that to getting to the NBA Finals. Dallas, we already talked about their sort of lack of players around Luka that are capable of really carrying a team when he's not going. Sacramento, are you betting on them to get to the NBA Finals out of the West? No, I think Memphis is probably the biggest challenger. And then if the Warriors get things together and Steph comes back, you got to say that they're going to be right there. There's you're just about any of these teams you could talk yourself into. We're an injury away from another team's injury and us being healthy away from at least getting to the Western Conference Finals, which I'm not sure they're wrong. I'm not sure they're wrong based on the way this season has gone in the Western Conference to this point.
Yeah, the Western Conference is the wild, wild west, literally.
It is. There's one more big performance guy that we haven't talked about.
Who am I missing?
One of our favorite guys from one of our favorite teams.
Robin Lopez, he got 1 point. He combined for the greatest.
It is not Robin Lopez. However, it is Joel Embiid.
Oh, yeah.
So Joel Embiid, his last 10, right on par with all of our other guys. Joel Embiid, 52% from the field, 37% from three, 85% from the line. That's one of the things I do love about Embiid, is the dude goes up to the line and makes free throws. 9.8 rebounds, 4.1 assists, 33.7 points per game. He's right there. And Philly's obviously been playing much better as well. And they've crept themselves up there within a game of the Cavs. They're in the fifth spot. You start looking at how this Eastern Conference shakes out, and that 4-5 series is shaping up to be pretty interesting, no matter who ends up in those two spots. Because I think, like we talked about last week, I know the Pacers beat the Cavs the other day, and they've been a really good story, but I can't see the Pacers cracking the top five. And then you got Miami after that, who started to play better. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They started to get healthy, and they're 20-18, two games over 500. I bet that's the first time they've been two games over 500 the whole season. And the Knicks, who nobody's really afraid of, and the Hawks, who are just a mess, and the Wizards. I mean, who knows? The Bulls, are they going to make trades? The Raptors, what are the Raptors going to do, man? Do they trade? Are they going to trade some people, or are they just stand pat? I guess I'm jaded because the games we've seen the Raptors, they've looked like they could win the NBA title.
They have looked good. They're not good. They have looked good. Like, I don't know. I don't believe in the Raptors.
I don't either, but are they going to do you think they try to play it out and see if they can put things together, or are they going to put somebody on the table?
I think they're going to play it out.
Yeah, that's what I think too, because I'm not sure. Look, who would they really give up that other teams – I'm not saying that teams wouldn't want their good players, because Siakam, lots of teams would want Siakam, but if you're Toronto, you'd want a lot back for Siakam. I mean, the guy's been third-team All-NBA a couple times, and he's having a fantastic year. Ananobi's a guy with what he can do on both ends of the floor that just about any team would want. Van Vliet, I don't know what his value is to a good team, what you'd be able to get back. I just don't know what you're remaking your team. Like, Ananobi's a guy that you want if you're rebuilding. And Siakam, maybe you say, well, he's a little bit on the top end of our age range if we're thinking about rebuilding this team. But Siakam, he's a weird player because I don't know how much I'd be willing to trade for Siakam, as good as he is.
He had a good game the other day, right? He was in the 40s or 50s.
I feel like he had a 50 pointer in the last 10, somewhere in there. I mean, he's had a really good year. He's been tremendous. Just for fun, let's get his last 10. His last 10. 48% from the field, 39% from three, 80% from the line, 7.5 rebounds, 6 assists. 29.2 points a game. So, yeah, I'd say that's probably an MVP stat line in a lot of years, in the last 20 years. Guy, you could probably compare that to guys who won the MVP, and Siakam's line compares pretty favorably to those lines, I would guess.
Yep, I agree.
He's been really good. It's just, you can just go down the line. I mean, we've already talked about 6, 7, 8 guys. Tatum, I'm sure we could look at the same thing for Tatum, even though Boston got destroyed tonight by the Thunder, and Brown and Tatum both play, but they gave up 150 to the Thunder, which isn't...
That's pretty good stats. 150 points, that's pretty good, Mike.
And Shea didn't even play.
What?
Shea did not play in this game.
That's crazy.
So here's your scores. Jalen Williams, 21.
Who?
Jalen Williams.
I'm joking. I'm joking.
Anthony Wiggins, 17. Giddey, 25. Dort, 25. And two guys off the bench, Isaiah Joe and Terrence Mann, each with 21. Putting up 150 without Gilgeous Alexander, with both Tatum and Brown playing. It's kind of crazy.
Kind of crazy?
Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. All right, Tatum, last 10. 47% from the field, 32% from three, 86% from the line, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 33.2 points per game. So he's kind of tailed off a little bit. Just a little bit. In terms of his shooting compared to where he was earlier in the season. So, I mean, he was the runaway probably favorite in the first month for MVP. And I would say most people now have cooled on that. I don't think that anybody would be putting Tatum, probably not even in the top three at this point, especially since the Celtics have sort of fallen off a little bit of a cliff at this point. Still first in the conference, by the way, but have definitely fallen off a cliff compared to where they were 3 weeks ago.
Yep.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered.
All right, I'm trying to think.
I got a question for you.
Go ahead, ask the question.
You don't have the standings in front of you, do you?
I do not.
All right, good. Okay, so here's what's interesting. There are, let's see, I did this before. There are, I believe, four teams that have a winning record. Well, let me see. I don't think there are even four. Maybe there aren't even four. There are only three teams in the whole league with a winning record on the road. Can you name those three teams? You should be able to. Well, I don't know. Let's see. There are three teams with a winning record on the road. Who are they?
I mean, I know Boston lost tonight. I'm going to say Milwaukee's one of them.
Milwaukee is not. They are 8-9 on the road.
Wow. Okay.
There are two Eastern Conference teams. No, I'm sorry. All three Eastern Conference teams.
All three are Eastern Conference teams. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to say Boston's got to be one of them.
Boston is 11-7.
Well, I might as well go with the other team that's on. I mean, they've won 12 in a row, so I got to go Brooklyn.
Brooklyn is 12-7. And there's one more. You'll never get it.
Okay, well, that gives me a hint that it's a not-so-good team.
This team is 9-10 at home.
And let me ask one question. Okay. 9-10 at home? Wait. They were talking. Oh, it's got to be. It's either got to be Indiana or it's got to be the Knicks. Hold on. Is it one of those two teams, Mike?
It is one of those two teams, yes.
So wait, we beat Indiana. Indiana, we beat them at. I'm gonna take the Knicks. I'm gonna say the Knicks.
The New York Knicks, 11-8, baby.
There you go.
That is crazy. Only three teams with winning records. Because party's like, oh, the Cavs are terrible on the road. Then you're like, so is everybody else. I mean, again, three teams with a winning record, and then you have only one other team. In the West, there are three teams that are 500 on the road. The Nuggets are 10-10. Sacramento 9-9, and the Clippers 10-10.
And the Warriors 3-16. That is so good.
That split is unbelievable. 17-2 and 3-16. It really is crazy.
That is terrible.
It's crazy. It's totally crazy.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to talk about, Mike? Is there anything else we need to address
I don't think we need to talk about anything at the bottom of the league because we kind of feel like hit on those teams. I don't feel like there's a whole lot of interesting things going on. I guess the only team that we didn't really talk about at all is Minnesota, and they've just been a train wreck in terms of Cat being out, and I know Gobert ended up sitting on the bench in one of their most recent games down the stretch, and there was thoughts that maybe they'd play better without Cat, but that really hasn't been the case. I think they're like 6-10 without him, or maybe they were 6-10 with him, and now they're right around 500 or below without him. So
Did you see how Utah lost tonight against Sacramento?
No, I only saw the final. It was 117-115.
So Darion Fox made a layup with like half a second left, but they are like 0.4 of a second left. They inbounded the ball and Larry Markkanen threw the ball up there and it went in, but it was after the time
after buzzer. Did they have it at half court or full court?
Oh no, they had it at full court, no timeouts. It was like shades of LeBron and the fadeaway and the, you know, when Love threw that pass to LeBron and he hit that.
So they threw it full court, Markkanen caught it and shot it.
Gotcha. I think there's a Worldwide Wob who I follow on Twitter is going to do an open investigation because they should have had 0.6 on the clock, but they didn't.
All right. Well, there you go.
And Fox had 22 in the fourth quarter in that game.
He's good, man. I've always been a Fox guy. Mike Brown, coach of the year.
Maybe. I mean,
He's got to be right there, right?
He never won it with the Cavs, right?
I don't think so.
Did David Blatt win Coach of the Year?
No, he did not. David Blatt did not. I don't think he was given an opportunity to really do much coaching. That's kind of what I think. Who are your early candidates for coach? Who are the Coach of the Year, right? Mazzulla from the Bucks or from the Celtics, sorry.
You got to give
Jock Vaughn.
Oh, for sure. He's gonna be in discussion.
Carlisle,
yeah. Okay, so what Western Conference teams? I think you Mike Brown. I
mean, Mike Brown's the only one.
What about
really
Ty big. Lue?
Maybe. I mean, they're still sixth. Will Hardy, the Jazz, they're 2 games below 500. If the Jazz were to somehow stay in the top six, then I think Hardy would have a chance. But to me, it's Mike Brown and it's Carlisle and it's Jock Vaughn. To me, those are the three front runners. And Mazzulla. Those are the four front runners right now, depending on how the standings play out. Who's your MVP right now? I don't want to have a whole MVP discussion, but if you had a vote right now.
I can't believe I'm saying this. Probably Jokic, right?
Yeah, I think it's Jokic right now. I think it's Jokic.
I think. Now, who do I think is the best player in the NBA? I think Giannis. This is going back to the whole LeBron thing, right? Like,
yeah,
those years LeBron didn't win.
Right.
He was clearly the best player in the NBA, but.
Right. Different. Those guys are totally different, Giannis and Jokic. But I think I'd give the edge to Jokic right now just because of the performance of his team, although their records are identical right now, so it seems a little bit strange to say that, but yeah. I feel like Denver, I don't know, Jokic, just what he does with the pass and what he does to just kind of carry that team, it feels just slightly more impactful at this very moment in this snapshot of the season. So I'll cast my vote for Jokic right now, and I'll cast my vote for Mike Brown for Coach of the Year.
I like both of those picks.
All right, there we go.
I do. All right, Mike. Anything else for the good of the order?
No, I think we're done.
We're done. Okay.
We're done. Stick a fork in it.
Stick a fork in it. Enjoy your day off tomorrow.
I'll be there at school, but I will.
Oh, you have to go to school?
Yeah, we're doing some asynchronous work and some different stuff, so we'll see how that goes. But that's where it's at.
Luckily, you don't need to eat in the cafeteria. You can just eat your PBJ in your office and you'll be all set.
That's all I need. I got my peanut butter and jelly. Got my podcast work. That's all I need, man. Everything's good. So everything's good. All right, let's leave it there. We're not talking any Browns because their season's over.
Hey, the Kings of winning meaningless games.
There you go. And I know we're not a football podcast, but prayers up for Hamlin and from the Bills. And hopefully that. I mean, I know he's been stabilized and whatever, but still in critical condition. So hopefully pulls through a scary moment. And whew, that's one of those things that you never want to see. I don't care what the sport is. You never want to see anything like that. So hopefully he's going to pull through and be okay. So
I agree.
All right, let's leave it there. Thanks to everyone for listening. We appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.